With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. When you need to know the truth, keep it on The Damian Richardson Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
To a man, Cameron Blewett, a concerned father who's joined his daughter's school council to just look what was going on there. We see a lot of that in the US, a lot of parents fighting back by joining the councils at schools and questioning what's actually going on, what's being taught in those schools. So it'll be good to talk to Cameron about that. And then, of course, we'll talk to Randall in the second part of this hour about the capitulation of drag queen story time with the council and what effects, what repercussions that has had and where Randall would like to go next now that Monash Council and Boroondara Council have capitulated. And it's interesting, though, listening to powerful people like Omar Khan was just talking about, like Larry Fink, saying they're going to enforce change. The change has to be manipulated. We're going to play a clip in a little while from Larry Fink actually talking about that very thing. What sort of change is that that needs to be enforced? A change according to corporate desire. And that desire is married now, or it's a mirror image of that same desire that government would want as well. It's about always about social justice. But social justice for whom? Larry Fink is the wealthiest man in the world. Does social justice mean that Larry wouldn't be the wealthiest man in the world, that actually he would give away so much of that wealth to those people that weren't as wealthy as he is to actually achieve the equality that I'm sure he likes to talk about? And we were talking yesterday, I was talking to John McBride about Susan Ryan. It's the same, oh, it's got to be equality. What sort of equality has it got to be for Susan Ryan, who just spends her whole life then inside of a bureaucracy made in her image by men, I guess, like Whitlam, and she just sits, ensconces herself in that bureaucracy for the whole time? Does she develop anything? She just sits as a police, operates as a police person on the culture itself until she ends up sucking the culture dry and destroying that culture? Is that what has to happen? Is that what I have to be party to? Is that why I work and pay my taxes so this can continue to occur about around me, or I'm going to be enforced to pay fealty to these things? You know, it's interesting. Look, the Albanese government gave $260 million this week, $260 million of taxpayers' money to the AFL, one of the wealthiest sporting bodies, the wealthiest sporting body in the nation by far, yet $250 million taxpayers' dollars needed to build a stadium in Hobart. The AFL couldn't afford to do it themselves, or maybe not build one at all. Sure, the people in Tasmania are probably really happy that they're going to have a football team after, you know, being a supportive of the AFL for a state that is an AFL state. But $250 million, and it's interesting because there's a couple of protesters at Albanese's, I think it's Macquarie Point, where they're going to build the stadium. And there's a couple of protesters, a handful, more than a couple, but a handful, saying, well, hang on, whoa, what about the stadium? What about housing? People can't afford to live in houses, and got under Albanese's skin because he responded to it. I was surprised he responded to it. He probably would have done better not to have responded to it because it made it appear on all the mainstream news. And the AFL are using that as manipulation. I will imagine other commentators have been talking about it. There's been a memo sent out to clubs from Tanya Hosch. She's the AFL's general manager of inclusion and social policy. I'm sure Susan Ryan, who wrote Women and Whitlam, who ensconced herself in institutions that were about inclusion and social policy, would be stoked that the AFL now has a position such as that, filled by another woman, another feminist, I would imagine. What's been the feminist attack on the culture, ultimately on the family? Why does a footballing body need such a position as the inclusion and social policy? I was really surprised because they had a change of CEO. New CEO taking over from Gillon McLachlan is going to be Andrew Dillon. And Andrew had to bat off questions, of course, about why it wasn't a woman. Should be a woman in this day and age. And, of course, The Guardian writes an article about how, well, there's been 13 heads of the AFL, where, even though it was formerly the VFL, since 1897. And in this article, she says, you know, and of course they've all been white men. What were they going to be? Writer? You know, typist, I should say, because just typing secondhand hackneyed thoughts in, you know, The Guardian, pretending that somehow this has just been history the whole time. Well, who was it going to be if it wasn't a white male in 1897? It should have been an Aboriginal, should it? It should have been an Aboriginal woman ahead of the VFL then? No, of course not. It's absurd. But she's pretending, oh, this, that there's got to be a change, and this change will come because, you know, this traditional path has to be destroyed, this traditional path of men assuming positions of leadership. Particularly men who most often than not had had played the game at an elite level, but though that's no longer a prerequisite. But the traditional path, that's not the traditional path anymore. The traditional path now is the path that's being written about in The Guardian, that someone should come from outside, from external to the power structure, and be imposed as the rightful heir to it, because that would be equality and inclusion. And I'm sure Larry Fink would agree with it. I'm sure Larry Fink would throw a whole stack of money behind it to make sure it happened, because now that's actually the tradition we're living in, not this old antiquated idea of what the tradition was. This is the tradition we've been living in for some considerable period of time now, and it will be the same. It will be exactly the same in the AFL, like it has been everywhere else. Don't pretend that it's going to be new and interesting. It's old now and hackneyed. Makes me think of The Brave New World, that book that was written about this very sort of changes, and the people outside of the centre of power, out of the social hierarchy that is constructed in that novel, were the outcasts, and they lived outside of the system. They lived like animals, but in many respects, they were the ones that were truly free. Do you have an upcoming community event, rally, march, festival, or fundraiser that could do with some free publicity? TNT Radio wants to promote it for you. Simply visit the What's On events calendar on the TNT Radio website and submit your event details, and we'll get the word out on TNT Radio.
Getting straight to the facts.
Enough with the lies. We need facts.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The Albanese government announced today that it will legislate a national net zero authority. It will have responsibility for promoting the economic transformation associated with the policies in the name of net zero emissions. TNT Radio News producer Jeremy Beck has details on this story. Jeremy.
Thanks, Damien. The Albanese government says the global transformation to a net zero economy is a massive source of economic opportunity for Australia. Of course, they would. Its regions, industries and workers, they claim, will all benefit. And in its announcement of the net zero authority today, took a swipe at the previous Liberal National Party government, saying it put its head in the sand for a decade and ignored the pleas of communities, unions and business for coordination and support through this massive change. In contrast, the Albanese government is acting to capitalise on our potential as a renewable energy superpower. The new legislated net zero authority will, one, support workers in emissions intensive sectors to access new employment, skills and support as the net zero transformation continues. Two, coordinate programs and policies across government to support regions and communities to attract and take advantage of the new clean energy industries and set up industries up for success. And three, help investors and companies to engage with net zero transformation opportunities. So there you have it, the three-point strategy for this net zero authority. Now, Damien, with the Prime Minister Albanese in London and all the focus on the coronation, I sort of wonder whether this has just been slipped through and they don't really want to give it a lot of publicity because maybe Australians are just sick and tired of hearing about this nonsense.
Is Australia going to achieve net zero at some stage, Jeremy?
Never. It's just funny to hear this talk about net zero as if this is inevitable. It never will happen. It's all a con. Look, even if we did go towards nuclear power, which would be a good thing, not to reduce emissions just because it's efficient and energy dense, even still, concrete will be a huge driver of emissions. There are so many things, emissions in agriculture, but it doesn't matter. In fact, it would be a good thing if carbon dioxide levels were increased. At the moment, they're around 400 parts per million. If they went up double, that'd be a massive amount, double to 800 parts, and I can't see it happening in our lifetimes, let alone for 1,000 years. But nonetheless, if they went up double to 800 parts per million, that would be a good thing. Nature would thrive. Plants love it.
So what's going to happen ultimately if they keep going this way? It's either going to have to be a really big cull of humanity or we're going to have climate police knocking down the door and telling us that our carbon emissions are too high.
That's the worry, Damien, because if they keep pushing this agenda, and I'm sure this new net zero authority will be designed to implement this change, and this change will require enforcement. If you and I don't go along with the agenda, maybe that's what they have planned. Maybe they'll be knocking on our doors and we're a threat to the planet. So unless we speak out now, maybe we may not be able to speak out if we keep going along with this insanity.
Well, we're talking hypocrisy, Jeremy, and I will go, but it's you're talking about the coronation that's happening this weekend. Well, Stan Grant's going to cover the coronation, I think, for the ABC. He's going to cover it, but he's been very, very critical in the past of the royal family and what they've done to destroy Indigenous culture here in Australia in particular, but not so disappointed in them that he would not choose to cover the coronation this weekend. Jeremy Beck, news producer, thanks so much for all your hard work this week. You are listening to TNT Radio.
President Trump reminding us why the Democrats are now the illegal party.
One of my most successful policies was Title 42. When Joe Biden came into office, he terminated every successful border policy, resettling untold millions and millions of illegal aliens into the United States. They're now your neighbors. Congratulations.
We'll talk about it coming up on the next Chris Salcedo Show. It's a Friday on TNT Radio.
Let's take advantage of the freedoms that we have while we have them to advance the kingdom's objective, to be salt and light.
Freedom is hard. Election security involves you, involves the voters.
This election for people of faith is vital that we see a change because the war against Christians is at an all-time high.
Transparency is the key not only to having honest elections, but to maintaining public trust in those elections.
Our ability to vote is not being withheld from us. No one's trying to stop you from voting.
The one place the American people can have a say is at the ballot box. That's why the Democrats and the far left are working so hard to get rid of all election integrity.
We cannot let our elections be anything but transparent. It is at the very heart of freedom in a free society.
And if we lose America, I mean, it's all over because the world has looked to America for hope.
Free and fair at salemnow.com.
Be a part of the conversation.
Free speech has a home.
So give yourselves a round of applause.
Let's get on with the show.
TNT Radio.
Okay, my first guest this hour is Cameron Blewett. He is an avid blogger, podcaster, and his main focus is being the host of the Fifth Estate podcast, where he covers the events of the day and talks about those things that corporate press and politicians won't cover, things not unlike what I'm trying to do on this show. We're in competition with each other and I, Cameron. No, not at all. But Cameron's joined his daughter's school council, so he's fighting back at a micro level, as we're seeing people are doing in the community, generally speaking. People are going to council meetings to have drag queen story times shut down. Cameron, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Damien. How are you?
Thanks. Now, good, mate. I'm good. Before we start discussing, I think we've talked about you fighting back at a micro level, and that's the level that everyday people can assume. But we're fighting against a much larger ideology at a macro level. People have been talking about Larry Fink on the show, particularly today. I've got a grab here from the CEO of BlackRock, Larry Fink, talking about forced behaviors.
Behaviors are going to have to change, and this is one thing we're asking companies. You have to force behaviors, and at BlackRock, we are forcing behaviors. 54% of the incoming class are women. We added 4 more points in terms of diverse employment this year, and what we are doing internally is, if you don't achieve these levels of impact, your compensation could be impacted. Okay,
we're doing the same
thing. And so it's just you have to force behaviors, and if you don't force behaviors, whether it's gender or race or just any way you want to say the composition of your team, you're going to be impacted.
There's the grab, Cameron. So it's an ideological framework of what we're ultimately fighting against, and they're obviously weaponizing education system through that. I'm not saying Larry Fink's actually got his hands on the Australian education system, but the reality is that's the way the globe is going.
Yep. And that's the thing, is that unfortunately, with the experience that I've got on school council, there's not enough parents that are wanting to get involved in it. And it's something that I do rant about a lot, even just with people at school, is that, people at work, is that they've got to get active in their kids' school councils. And they're not doing it. So how do we push back against all this ideological brainwashing that's going on?
How do we push back against it?
Yeah. So, I mean, without getting involved, how do we push back? We've got to get involved to push back.
And why do you think parents are reluctant to get involved? Is it just because they're so busy holding down a job, paying mortgages, et cetera, bringing up families, or are they frightened?
I think predominantly more of the latter. I'll use, for example, so one of the things that I raised at the start of last year, so I've been on school council, started last year, so I had a 12-month term then. But now I've been re-elected, so I've got a 2-year term. So that for that. So one of the first things that I raised was my concern with Year 7 kids in the first term of school being made, or they had a session where they had to create badges or buttons with their pronouns on it. And it's just like, you tell me what, 12-year-old kid knows what their pronouns are. And so I've raised that, and it took nearly the whole year to get it actually brought into discussion about. And once I've started it, a couple of other parents got involved. One parent whose son was in year 12 last year turned around to me and said that, or said in the meeting, was that her son was getting to the point where he didn't want to go to school on Ida Hobbit days, Wear It Purple days, and all these days that are dedicated to the alphabet groups, when he was brought up in a traditional Catholic household. So he felt uneasy about that, and then he started getting to the point where he felt excluded by it. So that was something that raised, and at the end of that meeting, this parent came up and apologized to me for taking over the conversation about it. And I told her I'm not here to run it. I just want to start the conversations, and if you've got something to say, go for it. So I think it's the point is that, yes, we are busy, but we're more scared of being thought of with all the buzzwords that our Supreme Leader throws around and everyone like that. So we're self-censoring, which we shouldn't be doing.
Did that make you feel better when that woman came up and had that conversation with you? Has it emboldened you to keep going? Yeah.
Absolutely. It's just because, you know, if just raising it once has got one parent going, well, this year, if it's raised again, there'll be new parents on it. So is that going to give them the courage to speak up? And then if we can push to a public meeting, is it going to give those parents the opportunity or the courage to speak up as well?
Because you've done a bit of research into it too, haven't you? And you've come up, you've found sort of advocacy groups backing this, this organisation called Minus 18, started by a guy called Colin Billing, who is potentially he's passed away now, a pedophile. Is that just a slur or is there some genuine accusation there?
I think it's a genuine accusation because the current CEO of it has been on there for like 12 or 15 years or something after this guy was sort of, you know, moved on from it. But, you know, with this minus 18 thing, so when I was raising these points with the school, is that the principal turned around and said, well, they've got to tread a fine line of education but not advocacy. So my view is, I'd Hobbit days, wear it purple days, wearing rainbow coloured lanyards, having minus 18 in, that is advocacy, especially when minus 18 is an advocacy group. They may say that they do education, but they're predominantly advocating for whatever it is that they're advocating for. So, this stuff is going to the schools. It's approved by school councils. It's approved by the schools. It's endorsed by the education department. I'd say pushed by the education department.
So you talked to the principal about this and the principal basically said to you, well, that his or her hands were tied at all they can do is teach the curriculum and this is what appears on the curriculum.
Yeah. So that's it. The school is following is guidelines set down by the education department. So, this is coming from the education department that, you know, all the posters, not sure what books in the school because I haven't got that far yet, but there's posters teaching, you know, telling 12-year-olds that they can have sex. And it's just like, you know, it's things that parents aren't aware of before they send their children to these places.
So what's the poster? You was telling me this before. There's the school counsellor, the person that the students go to when they feel like there's something they need to discuss and perhaps they feel like they can't discuss with their parents. I mean, this is it's already a setup. And there's a poster. Describe what the poster is.
I haven't seen it. I've only heard about it from the kids at school is that it says it's okay for 12-year-olds to have sex as long as they're over 12 and the age gap isn't more than 2 years.
Right. Yet, if you, like, because you, this is a state school, isn't it, that you're at?
Yes, a government-run high school.
Yep. So, because my kids are at at Catholic schools, all three of them were at different Catholic schools at some point in time, one of them's no longer at school, but my daughter's told me that if she had worn a crucifix to the school, it would be okay, but it has to be hidden, it has to be tucked underneath her shirt. Yep. But if someone has identified as being trans, they're allowed to wear their rainbow colours and there'll be no questions asked.
Yep, that's school council, school government policy.
So that tells us where we're at ideologically, doesn't it? When we have people like Larry Fink, who's running the show now, it's certainly not Christianity.
No. And, you know, it comes to that point is there, you know, poisoning children now, so then they come home conflicted about everything, and then it's, you know, similar to what's going on in the US now where these people are telling the students that they're the only ones that they can trust. They can't, you know, talk to their parents, and especially with the gay conversion laws is that, you know, if your child comes home and says they want to identify as a cat, you have to do it, otherwise you're in breach of legislation.
Look, historically, there's always been, I've always known gay people, but there's no doubt that as a parent, you would hope that your child wasn't gay because you would hope one day that they would experience the joy and the sorrow and the pain that is child rearing, that the generations would continue and you would have grandchildren. But now we're sort of celebrating sort of like a dysgenic version of society.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, honestly, I don't care what the kids turn out to be, as long as they're happy and they're making a worthwhile contribution to society and obviously can look after me when I get too old to look after myself. But yeah, you're right. It's the thing. It's teaching the children that the school and the people in the school are the family, and that the tradition, you know, the family that they go home to can't be trusted and, you know, shouldn't be looked at, and confusing them to the point where they don't know what they are. They identify as this one day, they identify as something the next. And it's, you know, there's a whole rabbit hole you can go down with that, with what, you know, it's creating a generation of people who won't be breeding and you know, won't be having families and won't be using a family unit to support each other, and then they'll be relying on the state to support themselves. So it's just going to create that, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy where, you know, the state looks after the kids and the kids look after the state. And yeah, it's just one of those things that the future seems very, very dystopian.
We're talking to Cameron Blewett from the Fifth Estate podcast about his role on a council at his daughter's school. We'll just go to news and we'll be straight back to continue the conversation. You're listening to TNT Radio.
Now.
I've got good news and bad news.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. A retired American Army colonel has dismissed US claims that this week's drone strike on the Kremlin could have been a false flag attack by Russia to justify an attack of its own. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban has weighed in on the US presidential race, throwing his weight behind Donald Trump, and Britain is bracing for its first coronation in 70 years, with King Charles III set to be crowned at Westminster Abbey on Saturday.
Do you have an upcoming community event, rally, march, festival, or fundraiser that could do with some free publicity? TNT Radio wants to promote it for you. Simply visit the What's On Events calendar on the TNT Radio website and submit your event details, and we'll get the word out, helping you make a difference on TNT Radio.
We're talking to Cameron Blewett from the Fifth Estate about his role in his daughter's school as part of the council. We're saying that the parents don't really want to get involved, but what's being taught to the children in their absence is maybe detrimental to our children's growth. This Minus 18 publishes books that are taught in the school, doesn't it? Teaching children things like tucking, binding, and padding. What's that about?
So this is obviously, you know, the person from Minus 18 goes and tells all the kids that if they're concerned about something. So binding is where the young girls bind their chests to make them appear flatter than what they are. Tucking is, you know, the boy tucks his parts so they don't, you know, doesn't look like there's anything there. Padding is so the, you know, the boys go and buy, you know, padded bras so they can have breasts and look like girls and things like that. And, you know, they're pushing this stuff on high school children. And this is the thing, you know, this is what they are. They're children. You know, once they get to 18, they're up to themselves. They can do what they want. But I think that there's a point where, you know, we need to keep this away from children. And with going back to that point that you raised before, is that if your daughter wore a crucifix, well, you know, where's all the religious stuff? And you go and present that at school anywhere, and they'll get kicked out. No, you can't have religious indoctrination at school. Yet this is the same thing.
Do you think that the churches can't stand up for themselves too, because they've been undermined by accusations and undoubtedly instances of pedophilia within the institutions themselves? So ironically, they can't defend themselves against the sexualization of children.
Yeah, but I don't think it shouldn't come down to the church itself. The church should be empowering the parents that go there, saying, hey, listen, this is what's going in your children's schools. It's up to you to say something about it. It's up to you to say, hey, hang on, we want to have an even playing field here. You want to talk about that? And if that's what has to be done, well, we want to talk about this too.
But the school will be punished ultimately, won't it? We just heard it in that grab by Larry Fink that these behaviours are going to be forced and there will be financial repercussions if they're not adhered to. And the schools know that. There will be financial repercussions because these Christian schools are still funded by the state now.
Yeah, so how do we get about it? How do we get around it? Do we just pull them out of schools and homeschool everyone? And, you know, as much as I'd love to do it, you know, I have to work to provide for the family. So it's that whole double-edged sword there is that, you know, while I'm at work, I've got to have the kids in these indoctrination camps, but then if I take the kids out of indoctrination camps, I can't work. So, you know, it's a thing. So I think the only option that we have, the only legal one at the moment, is to get involved in school councils and empower the school council to actually push back and to turn around and say, well, hey, hang on, let's push back as far as we can. If you pass directives and guidelines that we have to follow, then, hey, we'll follow it, but we're going to tell everyone that you're making us follow it.
So this is happening in the US more and more too, isn't it, that parents are starting to push back through the mechanism provided by school councils. But I think sometimes they're being banned actually too, aren't they, from even being able to be part of those councils. What is it like with you when you're in the room and the headmaster's listening to you and he probably or she starts to think, oh, God, here we go, here comes Cameron. Is that causing a problem?
For me, no, because I enjoy the challenge, though there are other members of, you know, government school council employees, some are teachers and some are admin staff, that do tend to roll their eyes every time I raise a subject. But hey, you know, I'm not doing this for them. I'm doing it for the other parents and for the kids that are going through the school. So, you know, honestly, it doesn't worry me what they say. But now that I'm on a 2-year term, I'm sort of going to let myself off the leash a little bit more and start pushing back harder.
Is your daughter embarrassed? Does she know what you're doing at these council meetings? Is she embarrassed?
No.
Or is she?
No. No, not interested, to tell you the truth, because that's not having any impact on her. But, you know, I'm hoping that by the time everything gets said and done, that it will have a more positive impact on her because there'll be more parents involved.
How old are the kids that are getting these books that are saying this is what you do, you tuck, you bind, you pad?
Well, minus 18 goes and talks to year sevens. So you're looking at, you know, 11, 12-year-olds.
11 and 12-year-olds. Oh. Yep.
I'm not even sure. I think they might even be going into primary schools too.
I'm a father of three children. I've seen all of it. My oldest is 18. My youngest is 14. I would feel very uncomfortable talking to someone else's children about the concept of tucking or binding or padding. It even says at one point in the tucking, oh, if you're going to tuck, don't do it any longer than 6 hours because it, you know, it could become uncomfortable. I mean, what is this information?
Yeah, and this is the thing. Yeah, I mean, why? Why is the school allowing it and why are the parents allowing it? And, you know, this is a resource that, you know, every kid has a smartphone. So all these people have to say is, oh, have a look at our website and to find other articles there. So, you know, these kids are going through all these articles and seeing all this stuff there that they're doing from their smartphones, whether they do it on the walk home from school, on the bus ride home from school, or, you know, while they're watching TV. But it's, I think this is something that needs to be stopped. And, you know, all for education and treating everyone fairly and following the golden rule and all that sort of stuff. But I think parents have to draw a line somewhere. And I think getting minus 18 involved in schools is overstepping that line.
What do you think the chances are of it being stopped, Cameron?
I think pretty good. If you get a motivated school council, because all the bills that come through, so minus 18, this is how I found minus 18 is in the schools, is because school council gets a record of the checks that have to be paid and things like that. So if the school council is engaged enough, they can pass a resolution that, hey, they're not going to pay any more money to minus 18. And then the bill doesn't get paid because the school council has said no.
But you know Larry Fink wouldn't be happy with that, don't you? You know that there's serious corporatocracy is not going to be happy with it. Why is the corporatocracy insisting on this?
because it comes back to this whole degradation of the family, making the state the one that cares for everyone, as we've seen for the last 3 years. Our illustrious Premier was the only one that was there every day saying, hey, I'm doing this to keep Victorian safe. I'm doing this to protect Grandma. I'm doing this to protect so-and-so. So there's a whole generation that will be looking at the state to protect them, to look after them. The state was the one that gave them the handouts when the state was the one that closed their businesses down and their workplaces down and said they couldn't work. So they became reliant on the state to provide for their family.
Was the economic reality going to catch up with the state? Is that a possibility? Because we're paying, apparently we're paying $700 per second in Victoria on the interest repayments on the debt of around $165 billion alone.
I not until we get a decent opposition, because while the Labor Party is still in power, if they get another term, they'll just keep diddling the books and diddling the books, borrowing more money, shifting money around. Like Queensland was when Bligh was in power. So I don't like what's going to happen when the Labor Party finally loses power, because the party that comes in is going to slash something chronic, and there's going to be a lot of pain for Victorians.
You've got your own podcast and you talk politics all the time. I've talked with you before. Do you believe there's actually a political solution? Do you think that the other side, the Liberal coalition coming into office, would make any difference to this agenda in the schools that's clearly been rolling out for a long time?
No, because they're the uni party. All we've got to do is just have a look what's going on in politics today with the leader, make another bid to expel Maura Deeming. I mean, it's just the uni party. If you want to do that, you keep it behind closed doors. They're doing nothing to appeal to me. I mean, why would I go and vote for them? And so going back to the other question, to get it out of schools, I think we need to get parents engaged. We need to go back to a genuine grassroots campaign and just make parents aware of what's going on, similar to what happened at Monash Council.
Has that become a template? Has that become a template for people resisting the woke agenda?
I don't think it should, because that only plays into their hands.
What's that?
By storming council offices and creating a big protest in council offices, because the council is going to do what the council does. You'd be better off, Angela, I don't know how you'd be better off stopping something like that. But
it was effective. Did they storm it? They were there. They were certainly present. Yeah. They certainly let it known they weren't happy with the council direction of council policy. But it worked ultimately, didn't it, because they got it shut down?
No, it only worked because a particular individual who I don't want to give any credence to, who I think is just a cosplayer, got involved in it. When he said he was going to get his group out, that's when they've stopped it.
The neo-Nazis you're talking about.
Yeah. It plays into the regime's hands because, hey, you're a bunch of neo-Nazis and fascists because you want this stopped. Well, I think parents should just turn around and, I don't know, name and shame parents that turn up with their kids there.
But that was successful, whereas petitioning council, et cetera, is never successful, is it?
No, because they'll do what they want because they're pushed from the government and, other powers. Council isn't independent, regardless of what anyone says. Councils are there to do the bidding of the government, just in a form where people think that they can get involved and have a say in what happens in the local area.
So we're facing a potential breakdown of society like they did in the Weimar Republic in Germany.
I don't think we're facing it. Well, I think we're in the start of it. I think it's coming. I mean, you have a look at it. Even our Premier sees nothing wrong. So who's the one that we look to for guidance and who's the one that guides the state through things, sees nothing wrong with adult performers reading books to children. Children that don't understand the concept that those individuals represent.
Furthermore, he makes it seem virtuous.
Yes. And we're in the middle of it, because if our Premier doesn't see anything wrong with it and is actually saying that we're wrong for opposing it, well, you know, what's left?
Cameron Blewett from the Fifth Estate, thanks so much for joining me on the Damien Richardson Show.
Thanks for having me, Damien.
You're welcome, mate, anytime. My apologies for the technical difficulties at the start of the interview. You are listening to TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
New York City Mayor Eric Adams is making news after suggesting that Texas Governor Greg Abbott is looking to harm cities run by black mayors and by extension accusing him of being a racist. Adams was talking about Abbott's busing of illegals from Texas to various cities around the country, including New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Denver, and Washington, D.C. Adams' press release called the actions morally bankrupt and said it's also impossible to ignore the fact that Abbott is now targeting five cities run by black mayors. When asked about it, he pointed out he never used the word racist, but doubled down on Abbott.
Governor Abbott sent asylum seekers to New York, black mayor, to Washington, black mayor, to Houston, black mayor, to Los Angeles, black mayor, to Denver, black mayor. He passed over thousands of cities to land here.
You would think that former cop Adams, who was caught on video calling white police officers crackers in 2019, would be the last one to call anyone a racist. But you'd be wrong. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
A sun-drenched lake stretches peacefully into the horizon. Rugged mountains frame the water staunchly. A narrow road twists against the jagged rock face. A car seat crushed against it. Glass stained blood red covers black tar seal. Red hot flames engulf crushed metal, muffling faint cries from inside. Enjoy the view. Don't become it. Slow down and have a good one. A message from New Zealand Police.
Life without liberty is like a body without spirit. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Now, this is a return guest. He was only on the show 2 days ago, and he's come back because there's an update on the story, so I wanted to get him back. Of course, it's the story about the drag queen story time being shut down by the Monash City Council, and now Boroondara Council has followed suit, and they've shut down their drag queen story time on May the 17th. The Monash one was going to be on May the 19th, so I just want to talk to this next guest. It's Randall, of course, who has a history in marketing and advertising, and he's been certainly advocating to bring about the end of drag queen story. Welcome back to the show, Randall.
G'day, Damo. Good to be here. How are you?
Good to have you back now, mate. Before we go to chat about what's happened, I just wanted that you in particular have had an effect on the Premier. He's called you out. He's called you out in Parliament yesterday. We've got a quick grab from him here, and it's Daniel Andrews talking about story time being cancelled.
Speaker, I'm saddened to have to rise to make a statement to the House in relation to quite shameful conduct out at the City of Monash last week and decisions that, very sadly, the CEO and the Mayor of that council have had to make in relation to cancelling a number of events, events that are about celebrating diversity, events that are about sending a message to often some of the most vulnerable people in our Victorian community, that they are loved, they are respected, they are safe, and they are supported by their government and their community. Now, I make this statement not just as the Premier of a state where equality is not negotiable. I also make this statement as a long-time ratepayer in the City of Monash. I don't know how many of these protesters, with not an exercise of free speech, but an exercise in hate speech, violence, bigotry, racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia, the list goes on. Ugly scenes on any measure.
Well, there you go. That's the effect you've had on the Premier. The Premier did say at 1.2, but it's having no effect. But it clearly is having some effect, isn't it? Because the drag queen story time has been shut down, at least for now.
Well, it's certainly having an effect on the Premier. And I think he's just run out of adjectives there to describe what's going on. They're clearly upset. Maybe they ought to be. The thing about it is we're talking about children 1 to 6, Damo, aren't we? Right. Mm. So the way that the Premier is talking about this, seems to suggest that we're talking about a wide community issue. But really, what we're talking about here is drag performers and kids aged 1 to 6, quite specifically. and the inappropriateness of drag performers mixing it up with kids 1 to 6. So you know, he can call it all of these names and call the people involved all of these names. But, you know, what I saw there was concerned parents, frustrated parents, residents, ratepayers, who wanted to voice their frustrations to the council. And the council, as I mentioned to you the other day, was not listening, you know, and will not listen to this side of the story. Interestingly, the media has not interviewed this side of the story at all, other than yourself, Damo. You know, to get our position, and I'm talking about Nine and the rest. So that's kind of curious. I wonder why not. Maybe they just don't want to hear it, you know. So,
do those slurs have an effect anymore? Racism, sexism? I don't know what's racism. I mean, what colour was the – I mean, how does – anyway, sexism, or homophobia, transphobia, are they meaningless, these slurs? Are they starting to lose their impact?
Well, I think so. I think what we're feeling here is that this is just standard script from the woke hard left. This is the way that they tackle the situation. Mate, I think there's a lot of people out there who feel the same way as we do. We just happen to be a group of people who turned up on the night and have vocalised our dissatisfaction with the situation on occasions previously. But there's a lot of people out there, I'm sure, that feel the same way, because we're just regular parents, we're regular people, you know, and we've had enough. We're frustrated with this process, this program, and, you know, as the CEO herself down there at Monash Council, Dr. Andy Diamond, said in her statement that she made to The Age, where she said that the event was actually designed to introduce children to diverse role models. Now, diverse role models. What are we talking about here when we talk about role models, Damien? My understanding of a role model is someone whose behaviour one looks up to, admires, or seeks to copy. So what we have here is the CEO, Andy Diamond, talking about drag queens being role models and children copying the role model, drag queens, drag performers. So I think there's a problem here. There's a problem here, and I think, you know, Andy Diamond is right out of line talking about role models, drag queens for children. Don't you agree?
Yeah, well, do you think, I think, because I had a little look at who Andy Diamond was before she became the CEO of Monash Council. She was a board member. She is currently a board member of the Good Shepherd, which is basically an ideological organisation to promote women and girls specifically. And that would be okay if there was one of them or two of them or something that, you know, but it's just constant. It's relentless. I've talked about Susan Ryan earlier in the show, and someone that's just written a book. Well, she passed away, but the book's just been published through the Whitlam Institute, Whitlam and Women, and she just held institutional positions of authority and power that were all about policing the culture itself. And that's what we're getting here too. It's just more of the same. People are forced to be policed by people like CEO Andy Diamond. She was also part of a board member of Respect Victoria before that too, which is the same thing, anti-domestic violence, you know, pro-women agenda, and ultimately at the end of it, an anti-heterosexual male agenda. And I think this is a big part of why people are actually starting to push back, isn't it?
You know, Andy Diamond, I also believe she did her doctorate thesis on gender studies. She's... she's made for the job, dare I say it. But, you know,
It's a web. It's a web. They're all linked in. We can single out Andy Diamond. It's pointless because there's a whole plethora of them.
Yes, that's right. You know, and they seem to be, you know, selected and stuck in these positions, you know, to comply and promote this agenda. And as I mentioned, you know, her suggestion that, I just want to come back to it, drag performers as role models for children, and we're talking 1 to 6 because this is what this program, this story time, was designed to do, introduce children to diverse role models Okay, she used the word role model. And I say she's right out of line. She needs to be brought to account with that, because there is no way that drag performers are going to be role models for children. I don't think anybody would disagree with me on that.
She's drunk on the Kool-Aid, though, isn't she? She's been drinking the Kool-Aid for a long time, and she's in line, she's in league with the authority, like Larry Fink from BlackRock, the wealthiest man in the world, is basically saying that he's enforcing these policies. And if you want to continue to exist as an organisation and not feel punishment as a result, then you will go along with his agenda.
That's right. I think we're going to see a lot more of this quite clearly. You know, parents are concerned about this issue. Okay, and it's just about this issue with drag story time, drag performers and little children. You know, the media wants to play it out that there's all of this issue with extreme right and all of that kind of stuff that we're used to hearing. Okay, the Premier is saying that. The media is saying that. The LGBTQ community in part is saying that too. And parents who are enlightened, inverted commas, are saying that. Okay, they're parroting that. The reality is the majority of parents out there would be concerned about this issue, and we're concerned about it infiltrating schools and other areas that involve children quite clearly. But this drag queen issue, this drag performer issue, is something that we are pushing back against here with the Monash issue that has just recently gone through, and we've had that success, and so that's been a good win.
But Senator Ralph Babbitt can't claim it for a success, can he? Because he turned up at the council meeting, but then sort of everyone told everyone to, you know, back down, because if it was going to go ahead, he didn't want to have any confrontation. It's Lily Livid approach, isn't it? It's an approach that ultimately doesn't win. Now, a lot of people are saying it's because the neo-Nazis said that they were going to get involved after people like Babbitt acquiesced his authority to stand up for the community. He could have really made a real name for himself and garnered a lot of support. He would have got a lot of opprobrium from the other side, but he would have garnered a lot of support, but he chose not to, didn't he? So are the neo-Nazis actually responsible for this drag queen story time being shut down?
This indecision came around kind of quite suddenly Thursday, just after midday. And, you know, I'd like to say that it was driven purely by the community and the community response in the lead up, some 6 weeks up to the date of the dumping of it. But something switched it quite suddenly, and I would say that, look, it may have had something to do with it, right? So I won't say no.
He didn't want the Moira Deeming treatment. He didn't want to be associated with neo-Nazis on the day and then get the Moira Deeming treatment. He couldn't handle the heat.
Probably the case. Yep. Yeah, for sure.
So he cared more about his job and his prestige and his position ultimately than he cared about the children, unless he strategically thought he was going to reposition himself. But we've seen that from Conservatives before in the past. It never does anything, does it?
No, Babbitt had a great opportunity there, but, you know, he kind of backed down and, you know, kind of went to the fence. And to sit on it, yes,
you know. Yes, and they're very uncomfortable. So, what would the government do from here? Do you think, Randall?
Well, it's just interesting, because if there's this ongoing suggestion of a threat, then maybe other councils might be a little bit less inclined to run with these story times and more concerned about their you know, inverted commas, safety or what have you. The threat doesn't come from the community. Okay, it doesn't come from the mums and dads and the parents who are concerned. That's not the issue. Okay, if they're concerned about anything, we're simply voicing our frustrations, our anger, our concerns about this issue, and we want the council to rightfully pay attention to that, and they don't.
So where to from here, then, Randall? So this is some sort of a victory, as far as you're concerned.
I guess, how
do you continue?
Communities need to pay attention to what's happening in their community with these story times and act appropriately.
And what about the role that the CEO of Monash, Andy Diamond herself, is it she just continues on now in that role?
Well, you know, I think we need to inform Andy Diamond about the inappropriateness of what she's suggesting regards role modelling and drag performers, and I think that's a conversation I'd like to pick up with Andy.
Randall, thanks so much for coming back on the Damien Richardson Show and telling us, giving us the update.
Thanks, mate. Good to be here.
Good to have you. I just see, you know, I mean, there's a difficult situation that the community confronted with, because you can push back against something, you can go through all the right channels, but when the channels are being run by institutions like BlackRock, with the financial backing of institutions like BlackRock, the WEF, the UN, etc., all the institutions of state which have been corrupted, and the only way you can make money is actually paying lip service or fealty to it, then there's a collision culture, there's a collision course inside the culture itself. But thanks everyone for being on the Damon Richardson Show this week. Hope you enjoy your weekend and keep listening to TNT Radio.